listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, all across the country and here in gloomy Los Angeles.
Gloomy.
You know, I comment about the weather, Paul,
gloomy.
Every week.
What's whose phone's going off? We discussed this. We discussed it at length.
Is that
you, Michael?
Me?
Mr. Anti-cell phone in public places?
No, I don't see that I missed a call or anything.
No, you know what?
I think it was a little message that was sent.
It doesn't matter. If it makes noise, it makes noise, Michael. I don't care.
Don't put me in the hot seat. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
We are indeed. And Paul.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
What are you going to... We just switched that alternate.
Yes, we
but
did.
It's okay.
I got a little...
It's
all right. You're a little huddled.
I am. You're drunk, man. I'm not drunk.
You are drunk.
Yet. I'm not drunk.
I know.
I'm excited.
But I'll tell you who we with our guest today. Since 1995, our first guest is an accomplished performer, has been licensed and authorized by CBS Worldwide and Desilu 2 LLC to portray Lucy Ricardo at Universal Studios Hollywood and throughout the world. But it is her fascination with another legendary leading lady that inspired her to create Nuttin' But Hutton, a joyous celebration of the songs of the one and only Betty Hutton, set to open next week at the NoHo Arts Center, a favorite venue of this broadcast. Please welcome Diane Vincent. Hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
One of two in-studio guests we
Absolutely,
have today.
Because also joining us in-studio, ladies and gentlemen, is a gentleman who founded the College Town Film Festival, designed, in his words, to create a film festival where the interests of the festival directors would align with the interests and passions of working filmmakers, especially indie filmmakers. So please welcome a great friend of State of the Arts and a creative and philanthropic force to be reckoned with, Eric Zudak.
Eric.
Thank you.
How are you?
Eric.
How are you, buddy?
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Barely joining us, man. You just got things going all over.
I move and shake.
You move and shake. Yes.
He's so cool.
He is.
He's so cool. Look at him with the...
He's got the...
See, I try to do that. Eric, this is 7 days from
is that right? Yeah. Oh, are you kidding, man? I'm Italian. I grow beards for parties. Yeah. I'm like Good the fuzzy Lord. Pumper barber shop. You remember that from our childhood?
No, I do. Not really mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Diane, do you remember the fuzzy pumper barbershop Play-Doh thing?
I don't.
You filled the head with Play-Doh. It was like a primitive chia pet.
I know the chia pet.
Yeah. It's a, imagine a chia pet with Play-Doh.
It's a frightening fuzzy pumper.
Image. It is. And it was.
No, you don't want to wrap your head around that one.
How was your week, Michael?
My week. How was my week? It was super busy. I mean, you know, the normal stuff. We have the wonderful And the World Goes Round. The Kander and Ebb show that I've been working on.
Yes,
for
huge hit.
Few months, hit. But it's coming to its closing day, closing evening on March 10th this weekend. So we are saying goodbye to it, but only temporarily because I think the show is actually going to reopen.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Same venue?
No.
Oh, different
I think
place.
It's going. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are interested in taking the show elsewhere. So
good.
Hopefully that's what's going.
I enjoyed it wholeheartedly.
Well, thank you.
I did. I
really
it.
Appreciate it.
And I'm not a. And I am. My wife Monica is not a big one for musicals, and
that's what
especially
you said.
With it being review.
Yeah.
But she was all over it. She loved it. It was interesting to hear those songs out of context, which is one of the big perks of a review.
And
you get
exactly.
to hear them a different
And the
way.
Fact that they can be weaved together.
Yeah.
So beautifully and.
Or woven. Is it weaved or woven?
Well, I guess it depends on which part of the country
weaved
you're
or
from,
woven.
Right?
I think either's good here.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Let's go with both.
Let's go with both.
I like you, Dan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do I weave or wove my hair, though?
Oh, no, you would...
I don't know.
You would
whatever you do, you're pulling it off beautifully, because it doesn't look woven at all.
Is it on straight?
Yes. It works for us.
I can see the chin strap.
That's the old Lucy thing.
So I'm glad to hear. My week was good. Although I have to say, I had lunch nearby. Hawaii. Hawaii here, not our usual place. Oh. Went to a different place.
Yeah.
And I finally decided that I'm going to make it my duty to stamp out the turkey burger in our lifetime. Because I think it's just
Bruce
an abomination to a burger in general.
You might be right.
Have you ever had a turkey burger that was worth anything, flavor-wise?
At the Federal, I have. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Federal is and.
Thanks for killing this bit.
I'm so sorry.
No,
go ahead.
Actually, I've had that one too, and I will say that in the land of turkey burgers, passable.
But what's your beef?
My beef is, first of all, I think that it was probably arrived at. Someone had a hamburger and said, okay, I know how we can improve on this. Let's remove the moisture.
Uh-huh.
Let's remove the flavor.
Yeah.
Let's make it the color of concrete, and let's give it the mouthfeel of a gym mat. And then we can put all that together. They're just like everything that's good about a burger is gone from that, and then they deceive you by calling it a burger, and it's no closer to the burger than an orthotic. You know, it was just terrible. So no more. Are we all?
I've had a pretty good orthotic burger.
Have you?
Yeah, I have.
Well, did that
it's
just
delicious and supportive, which is what you look for.
My God.
Anyway, so that's my rant today, if you want to call it a rant.
Turkey burgers. You know, actually, Paul.
Yes.
Actually, stop by your local Carl's Jr. and try their turkey burger because it's actually quite good.
Fat burgers are good too.
Fat burgers. I've had a great hamburger at Fat Burger.
But I mean, they're turkey burgers.
Do you have a favorite? Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you had a good turkey burger in town, or do you have a favorite hamburger place?
I have. I mean, I have a couple. Timmy Nolan's makes a great hamburger.
Timmy Nolan's?
Yeah, they
really
do.
Timmy Nolan's?
I like that place.
I haven't really ever been in it, but I've been by it. And it looks like I keep wanting to go in.
The food is surprisingly good just across the board.
For Irish food?
Is it all Irish food?
No, it's, I mean, it's, yeah, you know.
Pubby.
Oh, that's the pub in Toluca Lake?
Yeah.
Riverside Drive. Yeah.
So they have real nice food. I mean, there's a, what is that? Yamani Burger?
Umani?
Umani. They have a lot of different kind of things.
That's right.
Best burger in town, and they just moved. They were in West L.A. I don't know why I'm gesturing this big to say this. It's like I'm semaphore. I'm landing aircraft here. And I have hands like a tree frog anyway, so that's awkward enough. Hole in the Wall Burger used to be in West L.A. They moved to Santa Monica. Best burger in town. Look it up, Hole in the Wall. HoleInTheWallBurger.com. I'm going to talk about them on the show until I can eat them for free.
What about the Apple Pan?
Apple Pan is excellent. Apple Pan is excellent.
See, we forget about the good burgers.
Yes,
I can't chime in, though, because I'm a vegetarian. So
are you?
I can't even eat any of the
We're going to change that.
Is there anything you miss being a vegetarian food-wise? Or did you never care for it? Is it a dietary thing? Is it a principle thing?
It's environmental. It's dietary. It's health. It's
So you're just in a room full
of
carnivores here.
I was a vegetarian for 10 years.
Were you?
Yes, I was.
Cows wink at me now, though. They give me
Who they?
High five chickens. They're my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't eat them.
Yeah.
I don't miss.
You don't miss.
I don't.
Because my wife was a vegetarian for years, and you know, of all the things she missed, pork sausage.
Oh.
Of all things. And I'm
you know
not
what?
Speaking in euphemism.
I liked a good hot dog.
Right.
I liked a good hot dog.
Okay.
Even though they have junk in them.
Yeah.
I don't entrails and God knows what else is in them, but yeah.
I loved hot dogs until I saw a show on how it's made.
Yep.
They showed that, and it is just
that'll turn you.
That'll get you going.
Wow.
Shall we get started?
Yes, I think we should.
Okay, let's
We're
do that.
We're getting into some trepidation.
Some gray area. And we don't mean hot dog.
Our first guest, ladies and gentlemen, is an accomplished performer who, although a longtime fan of the legendary Betty Hutton, did not conceive of writing a tribute to her until she caught a very powerful and poignant interview with Miss Hutton on Turner Classic Movies. That moment became the catalyst for Nuttin' But Hutton, opening Saturday, March 16th at the NoHo Arts Center. Please welcome Diane Vincent.
I love the applause.
Yes.
Thank you. I don't know about me. Woo! Adam Cowboy.
It's a whole party. Diane, it's a pleasure meeting you. I met you
just a moment ago,
and you have me very intrigued.
You gave me the keys to the bathroom.
I did.
And you know, he doesn't do that to everybody.
Stick with me, babe. I'll take you right to the restroom. Take you right to the upper middle. you piqued my curiosity. I was reading the promotional material. What was it about? You saw this interview. What was it about this interview? Because apparently it was not like all happy-go-lucky, this piece, this interview with the guy. Who is it? Robert Osborne.
Do you watch Turner Classic Movies?
I do.
Hollywood
I love it.
Reporter, famous Robert Osborne.
Yes, yes.
The Ramblin'. Wasn't he the Ramblin' reporter?
That's right.
Was he?
He was the one that everybody read every morning.
Is he a vegetarian?
He was like the Walter Winchell. He might be.
Walter Winchell of his day. What was it about the interview that really grabbed your attention? Just her collectively? Was there a particular story that she told? Or?
Well, Robert is a wonderful interviewer, and he has great guests on the show. It's called... I forget the
name.
It's
called Great Guests on My Show.
Michael Sterling.
No, not my show. His.
He has these wonderful guests from old Hollywood, and I didn't know much about her when he had her on, and I knew her from Annie Get Your Gun primarily, the film Annie Get Your Gun, and The Greatest Show on Earth. I'd seen those two films. But outside of that, I didn't really know much about her work. And when he had her on, she started talking. Obviously, he asked her questions about her past, and she started talking about her career, and I was just riveted by her story of how she had one of those classic, rise and fall. She was on top. She was Paramount's number one star, and Bob Hope in the early 40s. And she just fell out of Hollywood, walked away from her career, lost everything, lost her family.
Wow.
Had a nervous breakdown, went into a mental institution, and ended up working for a priest in Rhode Island for 25 years.
Yes.
And I just found that story riveting. But aside from that, Robert was showing clips of some of her old films. And within those clips were these wonderful novelty songs, one after another. And I just had to find out more about that material. And it really spoke to me because it's the kind of material that I like to perform.
That you enjoy doing.
And so I started digging and digging and finding more of her music, listening to everything she recorded. And I said, nobody's ever touched her material. We've seen a lot of biographical review type shows. Ethel Merman, we've seen Judy Garland, Doris Day, Danny Kaye. But no one's done anything with her material, and I thought it deserved a second viewing. And it's such musical gems that not only I envisioned myself wanting to perform, but to share with the world, because they really are incredible tunes by great songwriters, Frank Lesser and Jimmy Van Heusen and Ray Evans and Jay Livingston and on and on. And
the story, when you mentioned it, it sadly parallel sounds very much like the
mine?
No. I didn't want to bring it up, but thanks. Excuse me. No, Francis Farmer.
Yes,
very similar to Francis Farmer, of course.
Yeah. I'm glad Francis I'm not Farmer doing the Francis Farmer.
Yes, well, yeah. You don't leave tapping to the tunes after the lobotomy scene in the Francis Farmer thing. Yeah.
You know, I if you forgive me for interrupting you, I have also equal interest in this project because I had three experiences with her.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
I'll
make it very brief.
Yeah.
But one was when I was very, very young, and I was acting professionally and on the theater stage, which is where I started my acting career before film and TV. But she was doing Annie Get Your Gun at a theater that I was getting ready to open in Bye Bye Birdie, which was following that show in. And you touched upon her nervous breakdown. She was co-starring with a gentleman by the name of Harv Presnell. Remember him? And during the course of the performance, odd little things happened with her performance, such as he was singing in the aisle. It was a theater in the round, big 3,000-seat theater. He finished the song. She was in the dark on the stage, ran off the stage and up to him on the aisle, looked him in the face, grabbed him, and said, "You are so wonderful. You are so wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, Harv Presnell, how fantastic is he?" And
right in the middle of the performance.
Yeah, she just stopped.
Nobody ever does that with me.
I know, right?
Never. It never happens.
She was enamored. That's a little awkward.
Yeah.
Then we thought maybe she just got excited by that. Mm-hmm. So, the audience was, the next moment came before a scene came up on the stage, before the lights came up, and you heard her voice saying to somebody for the backstage, like, I'll just say, Susan, Where's little Amy?
Oh, my goodness.
And you'd hear Susan, who was we find out, as an audience, to be a nurse who was taking care of her grandchild.
Oh, my word.
I'm coming, Ms. Hutton, and bringing down the child down
Oh, so just in performance, not like it was picked up on a mic or something,
no.
called out to
She wasn't in performance yet. She was in the dark as the lights were getting ready to come on. And so they brought the lights up, and the nanny comes down with the child, and she joins her on stage. Betty talked to her for several minutes and introduced her to the audience. and then said,
isn't she wonderful?
Yes.
Oh
yes.
My God.
And then they left, and then they resumed the show.
That is wild.
Now, that was when I was an 11-year-old boy.
Oh, my
so
God. You
then,
remember that vividly, though.
Then, cut to a tour that I was doing around the country with a show, and we were in Boston working, and I get open the paper, and it says the Chanhasset Dinner Theater presents Betty Hutton in Anything Goes. I think it was Anything Goes. And I thought, oh, my gosh, it's been all these many, many years. I'm going to go. I'm going. I have to go. I have to be there.
She was playing Reno, I suppose.
Unfortunately, the same thing happened.
Susie!
Wow!
Susie was long gone.
Isn't he wonderful?
This was announced as her comeback.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
Well,
so
in Boston, yeah.
It was pretty scary, and she simply would not leave the stage.
Aww.
And she wanted to continue singing after the performance was over. And, you know, she'd taken her bows, and the lights came up, and people started leaving. It was a dinner theater, and a very large one. And they were leaving, and she said, don't go.
Aww.
Please don't go.
Aww.
I have so much more to do for you.
Yeah. See, Michael, those are the sad things that we didn't want to dwell on, because her story was sad.
Right.
I mean, it was heartbreaking. There was a lot of... And within... Oh, I remember Private Screenings is the interview segment that...
Oh, okay.
That is
that's the name of it.
TCM. And when she was telling her story, you realized that her story was very dramatic and came with a lot of heartbreak. And in celebrating her, I didn't want to dwell on that. Now, there are biographical elements within our show.
Right.
The audience will walk away having learned something about her and her career. But we didn't want to dwell on that, which is why I'm not impersonating her, which is why we're not doing a biographical journey necessarily. It's mostly about the music.
Yeah, I noticed that.
The music is so happy and fun and uplifting and joyful.
I noticed that. It's like it's like almost like a play within a play. Like
it
you're
is.
Trying to mount, the character is
Correct.
Trying to mount a tribute to Betty Hutton. So it's actually two tributes.
Yes, it's a tribute to me. I'm playing a girl. It's an over-the-top version of myself, using my nickname in life, which is Dee Dee. So that's my character. And I'm coming into the office of a down-on-his-luck producer to pitch my Betty Hutton tribute.
Sure.
And Act One takes place in his office. And me and three chorus boys. Of course, if you're going to do a one-woman show, you might as well do it with four men.
There you go.
That's what I always say.
Their names.
Our actors are... we have four men.
Yes.
Nathan Holland, the fabulously hilarious Nathan Holland, plays our producer named Buster Haymeister. And our three chorus boys, although they are far more than chorus boys. Tom, Dick, and Harry. You did your homework.
Did.
Thank you, Michael. They are far more than chorus boys, by the way. This show was very difficult to cast. I have to say that because they're not just triple threats.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be quintuple threats. Sing, dance, act, be funny, and sing very sophisticated vocal parts.
Well.
So we have Chad Borden. We have... don't help me out with this because I know this. No, I know I can do this from heart. We have Justin Jones is our Harry.
I love Justin. He's
and Dick is Daniel Guzman. And we are so lucky to have these three extraordinarily talented men. So grateful to have them.
Because they're like those intricate 40s harmonies.
Yes, very intricate. I want to say, you know, Manhattan Transfer, but earlier, like say the Modern Heirs or something like that. Very tight. My husband, Sam Krieger, is our he co-wrote the book with me, and he's our arranger, orchestrator, and musical director, and he's also producing. So he's wearing many hats.
I thought he didn't want to marry an actress.
See what happened?
That's
see
in
what
both
I did?
It's in both of their bios. It says that they've been married for 20 years, although he didn't want to marry an actress. And at the end of his bio, it says, and he married 20 years, but she didn't want to marry a musician.
Of course, my husband's joke is always, he said he'd never marry an actress, and I still didn't.
Oh, so painful.
That's hurtful, isn't it?
Nice.
Yeah. No, but he's, you know, he's been a huge, I mean, when I first started writing it, I was doing it on my own. And then he got very involved and passionate about the material, and he jumped on my crazy train and ended up orchestrating this beautiful, we have a 6-piece band, state-of-the-art sound system at the NoHo Art Center, and Cricket Myers is doing our sound.
We love Cricket. I love Cricket.
Tony Award nominated. Yeah. I mean, our design team, I call them the dream team. We have, you know, Jeffrey Schoenberg on costumes. We have Jeff McLaughlin doing our set design. And
are you in the big room or
we
the small?
We are. It's 99 seat theater. Did I say that?
So we're at the 99 cent store.
Yeah, right.
It's a big space, so
it's
doesn't feel like 99.
It's a big, beautiful space. No, it doesn't. The audience is raked. And it's just a really, really beautiful space run by Kevin Bailey and James Mellon, and they are lovely
hosts, people, yeah.
Lovely landlords.
I'm going to throw this information out there while we're certainly not done, but we're going to throw out this is Nuttin' But Huttin'. It opens on Saturday, March 16th, isn't it?
Thanks.
Saturday, March 16th at 8 p.m. through Sunday, April 28th. That's at the aforementioned NoHo Arts Center. That's 11136 Magnolia Boulevard at Lancashire in beautiful NoHo. And for tickets, you can call 1-800-595-4849. That's 800-595-4849. Or visit nuttinbutthuttin.com. And remember, there's no G's on the end of nothing. And Nuttin is spelled N-U-T-T-I-N. So nuttinbutthuttin.com. And we will throw that information out again before the end of the hour, at least once more.
Absolutely. And Diane, I want you to know that anything I just said about Miss Huttin was only my experience.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad that you shared that, because first of all, I find it very interesting. Anybody who ran across her, I like to
hear those stories. A little payoff because
there's more.
Yes, as an adult, I was in a restaurant eating. Well, what else would you be doing? But I was sitting.
A delicious turkey burger.
Yes.
And sitting across from me, I turn around and there is one Betty Huttin.
Where was it?
The restaurant was called Le Restaurant on Melrose Place in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And she was just radiantly beautiful. And she was so happy, and whoever she was with. And I couldn't resist going over and introducing myself to her.
Good for you.
I said, you're really one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen on a stage. And I've seen you twice. And I said, and you gave quite a performance, I might add. And I said, I'll never forget your work. And in motion pictures. And I wanted to just interrupt you for a moment and say thank you.
Did she love hearing that?
She did.
Good.
And she,
yeah,
we talked for about 5 or 6 minutes after that.
Uh-huh.
And then I, you know, let her go back to dining.
Well, cool. I tell you, you know, the culture that we live in now with that everyone, you know, everyone knows everything that's wrong with everyone and immediately goes on the internet. And everyone shares these sort of maladies as almost like they're badges.
Right.
And I just think it's really fascinating if we were able to look back at so many people of that era. I would bet you there are dozens and dozens of people that were suffering from exactly the same thing.
Oh, there were.
But it just wasn't. Yeah, everyone was self-medicating with alcohol in those days because no one, it was taboo to go look at anything, you know, or to talk to anyone about it.
And I don't know whether you know this to be a fact, but someone told me that evening, another guest in the restaurant, that she was actually at that time working as a nurse at Cedars-Sinai.
Oh, I
did you ever
didn't
in your
come
research?
Across that in my research
yeah.
at all.
Okay.
No, but that would kind of make sense.
You should write the sequel, Michael.
Wait,
you know so much about her. Do the next one. Yeah. Huttin' Two.
The sequel.
Still Nuttin' But Huttin'.
Less than Nuttin'.
Oh, there you go. More than
Nuttin'. Like
less
that.
Than Nuttin'.
More than
no.
There you go.
So now your husband, was he also a sounding board for content on it, or was it just like he was just the musical guy?
Definitely.
Yeah,
he was very much a part of the structure and the pieces of material that we chose. And I mean, there was so much material we didn't end up incorporating. I'm mainly focusing on her music from the films. She was a number one recording artist for Capitol and then went to RCA, so she had a lot of recordings that had nothing to do with her films. film. But I liked the music from her films. So it's mostly her earlier work that we focused on. And my husband was able to get his hands on a lot of the original manuscript and music from the Paramount vaults, which, ooh, I don't know if I should have said that on the radio, but anyway, we have a lot of the original charts that he did his own arrangements on, based on stylistically on her recordings from the films.
Boy, that's a gold mine.
There's so much material though that we didn't get into, which will also maybe go into the sequel.
Right.
What did you call it, Eric?
Hutton. No, less than.
Oh, no, that more than Hutton.
more than that.
Wait, what?
But you know, in talking about not wanting to dwell on the drama, but you know, interestingly, one of the tidbits we do share is how she replaced Judy Garland in Annie Get Your Gun, because Judy was having challenge with self-medicating and those types of things.
A lot of demons.
And she was actually fired from the film. Wow. And they brought Betty in, and Betty, to me, was the quintessential Annie Oakley, which, as big of a Judy Garland fan as I am, I almost wonder why she wasn't first choice, because she was so tomboyish and so vivacious, and she was that girl.
Right.
You know, that feisty...
Judy's a little frail to be Annie Oakley.
Well, you know? I just don't think it was a perfect fit, so it was kind of a happy accident. Well, maybe not so happy for Judy, but you know what I'm saying? But yeah, so a lot of folks from that era did have those. And again, that's why we don't want to belabor her life story.
No, you don't want to belabor it, but it does flavor it.
And we've tried to find creative ways to share that. I am not a big fan of the review format myself, so I didn't want to do it review style, and I also am not a big fan of one person, at least for me as a performer. I love playing off of people, which is why I wanted to bring in these funny characters, my Tom, Dick, my Harry, and my Buster. So through them, we are able to give some biographical information. We also have some other elements, and what I hope will be considered clever devices in sharing tidbits of her story without doing, and then she sang, and then she sang, and in 1945, the Stork Club, or the, you know, I kind of check out sometimes.
As do I. You need a more interesting narrative.
Brilliant, I didn't mention them because I saved the best for last, Larry Raven and Lee Martino.
Yeah.
How lucky am I? Mm-hmm. How lucky am I to have
them? It doesn't get much better than that.
Get on board. I mean, when we did a living room read, and Larry just was so excited, and we're so grateful for him. And he's been more than a director. He's a great vision, and he is really have been a play doctor for us too. He's helped us shape the piece, and you know, he's been very, very hands-on. And Lee Martino, what can you say about this woman? They're co-creating this together. But, you know, she's a multi-award-winning choreographer, one of the most sought-after in this town, and she's so, so clever and creative and smart and musically savvy, and I just adore them as people. We all know that the 99-seat theater is challenging because you only get your actors for 36 hours a week.
Yeah.
So putting this up in that time, and everyone else, because they're working for waiver, which doesn't pay, you know, they all have to take other jobs. So we have to work around everybody's schedules and conflicts. So that's been probably the biggest challenge.
Oh, it always is. I have a theater company in town myself, and that's the big thing, you know, just to, because you can't really, I mean, how do you compete if someone books a TV show?
Yes.
And that could be their salary that fall.
And by the way, I want to mention Michael Donovan helped us find these folks, and you know, he knows the talent out there, and
yes,
he brought us the best, and we actually had choices, and we were just thrilled beyond thrilled to get the people that we got.
The show is Nuttin' But Hutton. This is opening Saturday, March 16th at NoHo Arts Center. For tickets, 800-595-4849 or visit nuttinbuthutton.com. And once again, we'll throw that out before the end hour.
A lot of tea. I just want to mention real quick, when the Elport, whoopsie doodle, little slip, when the NoHo Arts Center, because we were talking about the Elport Tower, when the NoHo Arts Center put up our marquee the other day, they didn't have enough teas. Because there's a lot of teas in Betty Hutton and Nuttin' But Hutton and the website, so they had to go buy more teas.
Had to go buy more teas. That's, so
that should
a,
only be
a wheel of
problem.
Fortune.
No, if that were the least
problem.
Of our problems,
exactly.
We'd be okay.
Yeah. We'll definitely chat again, Michael.
Yes.
We don't have an arts calendar this week because we have a couple of quick reviews. We were both active theater goers before we talked to Mr. Zudek. Mm-hmm. And also chat with Diane some more. But what did you go see?
Well, I actually, one of our guests last week was a very talented, one of LA's most popular musical theater performers. His name is Will Collier.
Oh, I love Will.
You know Will?
Of course.
He's fantastic. And aside from his great talent as a musical theater performer and an actor, he also is a wonderful composer. Do you know that side of him?
That I didn't know.
Yeah. And we actually had him on to promote a show that he is... written 7 years ago, but it has been a work in progress.
I know
that. It has been playing through various incarnations and finally landed in Los Angeles for a more than workshop production, which is what it was being done as in the past. And it's called Right Together, Left Together. And I went there really with no expectations necessarily, though I'm such a fan of Will's that I couldn't think that it had to be good because it was coming from him.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I sat there for about the first 10 minutes. You know, on a new piece of work, you kind of adjust yourself to everything that you're looking at and how it's all coming together. And I absolutely loved this show. I loved his take, musically speaking. Pamela Eberhardt, who was also on the show, if you remember on the telephone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she
last
called
week's
in.
Show, it is the lyricist and wrote the book, and Will wrote the music. And it was just the cast, utterly charming characterizations by each of them.
Yeah.
Very, very gifted cast members. And I was not familiar with the exception of three people, amongst the cast. And I will say their names to give them a shout out. Lucas Alifano, Katrina Rennells, Trip Pettigrew, Jeff Scott Carey, Emily Clark, and her husband Bobson Simpson, two amazing actors. They were all very, very good, and Jenny Incontro. It was a witty and emotionally riveting book, as I said, written by Pamela Eberhardt, not to mention her very, very perfect lyrics for Will's music. Sensational direction by the effervescent and very wise Nicole Dominguez, who took great care with this production, and Will for his perfect forming of very dynamic pieces of music that fit this very fast-paced evening of contemporary musical theater. And it was all about the relationships between these six or seven people, and with one of them, two of them getting married to one another, and the big wedding day, and they were all stuck in New York City in what was being touted as a hurricane coming through. So they were all kind of stuck in the place where the wedding was to take place, and they couldn't get out. So what pursued from that point on was very, very interesting. And the theater company that presented this is Unknown Artists Company. And believe me, there was no misstep with this production. It marched right down the aisle, a radiant winner on all counts.
Good.
Yeah.
I had a very pleasant experience myself. I went to the Colony Theater in Burbank, which I had never been to.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, it does have the best parking of any theater ever, because the structure's right there. But Ronnie Orbach, my friend from Chicago, who was here last week talking about the show, is in this thriller of Peter Colley's called I'll Be Back Before Midnight. And it's been a long time since I've seen anything like this, very much along the lines of Wait Until Dark.
Mm.
There's a Hitchcockian type of feel. The set was just very, foreboding and really kind of creepy. And it was just a wonderfully scary, quirky night out. Monica and I had a great time. It's just a four-hander, and the cast was uniformly excellent. This is Kate Marr, was Laura, Ron Orbach as our friend Ron George. Tyler Pierce played Greg, and Joanna Strapp played Jan. In terms of the show, the actors are really saddled with something that's not there. It's difficult for them, but they pull it off beautifully, is that the first act of the play can be a little on the talky side, because with only four people performing, there's all this exposition that they have to get out, especially Ron's character has to come in and give all the past history.
He's like
of,
the caretaker?
Yeah, farmer next door owns this cabin that they rent.
All right.
But there are some very funny moments, but there's also some very jump out of your seat
really?
Moments, too. Yes.
I love that.
And that's one of the things that's kind of cool about all the It's not that you get lulled into it, but you sort of get a little more comfortable. It's like, oh, things aren't so bad here. And then all of a sudden, things are very bad there. Mm. So, and as we saw from Ron's interview, or heard from Ron's interview, I can't give too much detail on it because there's so many twists and turns.
Right.
But it's definitely worth checking out. This is at the Colony Theater. And for tickets, you can visit colonytheater.org. And theater has the R-E spelling. And the Colony Theater is at 555 North 3rd Street at the corner of Cypress in the heart of the Burbank Media Center.
I love the Colony.
It's great. I've never been there. Beautiful place. Mm-hmm. We're actually going to have Barbara Berkeley.
Beckley.
Barbara Beckley.
Barbara.
We're going to have her on for the next event that, well, we'll let her talk about it when she's on the show.
Yeah.
Our next guest is responsible for a refreshingly new and interactive approach to the film festival. I'll paraphrase, but in short, this is what CollegeTownFilmFestival.com has to say. We want your movie. We want to screen it. We want to talk about it. We want to be an important step in your marketing campaign. But mostly, we want to take your film on tour with us. We want audiences in several cities and key demographics to watch your film and provide feedback. And we want to share it with universities and colleges with first-class film and acting programs. Here to tell us about this revolutionary idea is the festival's founder, Eric Zudak.
Thank you.
Hey. So why is that a revolutionary idea? The idea of, is it just more interactive with the filmmaker, or what is it?
It's not, actually. I mean, and this is not any kind of indictment of any film festival, mm-hmm. although there's a couple I could indict. but I'm a business guy, and I went into the production world, and we took our film out to some festivals, and I just made an assessment very, very quickly that it didn't seem to really be about the film or the filmmaker. This is, again, there are very good reasons for that. This idea is something else, and one of the key components is that we don't take a lot of films because we want to fully support and promote the films that we do take.
Okay.
So we have a very small number of feature films and a fairly small number of shorts. But the idea is that as much as possible, those films, particularly when the filmmaker is going to participate, will have some kind of event built around them. Mm-hmm. To provide actually something back to the filmmakers,
like a guest or a character in the film,
some still photography and maybe some interviews with the audience after they see the film, something that they could put in a press kit that they could actually use, mm-hmm. and then actually gather sort of metrics, audience feedback, and those sorts of things from. A little bigger. I mean, I've been to festivals where there was 11 people in the audience for a screening, and four of them were the production team.
Right.
It's very, very difficult to really get any sort of, read on what you've got. So that was kind of the primary, driving force. And I was very fortunate that I had some friends and colleagues who just really jumped on board with this idea, and I also had a childhood friend who's a professor at the university at Penn State University, mm-hmm. Who is an absolute warlock when it comes to getting people to do things. Matt Jordan and I played Little League together in Athens, Ohio.
Oh my God.
And I think that's sort of the second part of it is I grew up in a college town, mm-hmm. and so you don't know until you leave the college town that there isn't anything else like it on the planet.
Right.
People want to talk about things, people care, they support the arts, even though it's a town of maybe less than 50,000 people. And when the students are gone, it's less than 20,000 people.
Right.
But people are going out and they're seeing arts and they're participating in things. And so, what you find out is that by, introducing filmmakers to that sort of environment, it means a little more to people in those kind of communities. So they will support it.
There's still a sense of event. They're not all jaded, about, my brother is a screenwriter, like out here. My brother's a screenwriter, and my sister does, so there's still a sense of ceremony and everything to it. The other thing, too, that you mentioned, distilling it down to... less properties, less things. I mean, I know that there's film festivals out there that will take short films. They'll take the shorter ones so they can cram more into an hour. you know, right. and present more of, you know, and get more attendance because, oh, you know, it's one of 40 shorts.
Sure. Absolutely.
And but this is because it's more focused on the filmmaker, even though it's less shown, there's more focus for the
Well, that's right. And, yeah. and you know, the other sort of track is that we want to really involve the students at the universities with in discussions and conversations with the filmmakers and with the professionals. You know, there's a question I think you have to ask yourself if you're a kid in film school, you're 20 years old. Do I want to make films or do I want to work in film? Mm-hmm. And this is a very important question to answer before you embark
go
on,
into it, yeah.
you know, do you decide to go to graduate school? And we've been very lucky. We have AFI is actually going to be with us in in-state college.
Oh, really?
Presenting a curated sort of mini festival of the work of their fellows. So we'll show several of these films. And then there is a representative from AFI and Mr. Joe Garrity who will be there to talk to people about applying to AFI, and I think that, you know, they have an interest in maybe attracting some non-traditional applicants for their film program. So it's not just people who come straight out. You know, maybe some other disciplines might be interested in looking into that. So we feel, you know, very happy about that. And
that's
well,
awesome.
And when did you put this all together? How long has it been?
Really started thinking about it and talking about it last summer and really worked on it most of the fall. I guess we actually started taking submissions in December. We would have liked to have done that earlier. It just didn't kind of work out that way. So it's come together very, very quickly. And
I was going to say, that's fast.
Yeah, it's very, very fast.
And there's a venue that's coming up?
Want to throw that out there. It's the first of several venues, right?
That's right. We're going to do three this year.
Okay, but the first screening is at the State Theater, and this is 130 West College Avenue in State College, Pennsylvania. And then, and in case we didn't throw it out there, the website for people to get more information. And I want to ask you something after this. The collegetownfilmfestival.com, easy to remember, collegetownfilmfestival.com. Are there any particular films? I mean, obviously, all the ones that are chosen are ones that you like. Are there any particular ones that sort of stand out in your head?
Well, the one that I think I'm the most excited about is it's a film called It's Too Cold Out There Without You, or maybe just Too Cold Out There Without You. And this is a documentary. It's the only documentary in our program about a transgender Episcopalian priest.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Who
a great musical.
I'll be glad to hear that, actually. And I think that, you know, while we're, you know, this festival doesn't exist to advance any particular agenda or anything like that. I think that the thing that is so transformative about film in general, and one of the things that really leapt out to me about this particular film was not only is it very well done. Amy Gaddy is the director who made this film as clearly a labor of love, and the subject of the film is Chris Fike, who is he lives in Boston. He's an Episcopalian priest. I think that what's really interesting about, you know, reaching like this age of people with this movie is that when you watch, you spend an hour and a half with this guy. There is nothing about him that's not a man. There is nothing feminine, not remotely. It's impossible to imagine him as a woman. And I think that no matter what your politics and or your, you know, particular religious restrictions might be, you viscerally understand the decision. Viscerally understand, whether you can admit it to yourself or not, you viscerally know that this was the right choice. And so that to me is, you know, extremely important. But we have, you know, we have some other stuff that's pretty fun too. The Unusual Calling of Charlie Christmas is a pretty cool little very indie, you know, has a real indie heart and indie edge.
But the title alone is
title is fantastic.
I'd go see it based on that.
Yeah.
Right.
That is a very provocative title.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so we have, you know, some other things, and we got a documentary, a short documentary. So I guess that isn't the only documentary in our program, but the only feature length, called "Baffle Their Minds with Bold."
It's okay.
Can
you
say bullshit.
You say
that here.
Yeah, the internet.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Now I feel much more.
Don't say fuck, but you say bullshit. Paul. I'm sorry, Michael. Forgive me.
And that's something that. is really fascinating. So we actually got a shocking, you know, honestly, taking a swing at this for the first time, I was very pleased and very impressed with the quality of the stuff that we got.
Are any of the people that you mentioned, are any of them coming to the festival?
Oh, yeah. Chris Fike is going to be there.
Oh, the subject of the priest, first yes. documentary. Really?
And his daughter.
Oh, wow.
They'll both be there Friday. It's a Friday screening mm-hmm. at 3 o'clock, and we expect that to be a pretty big event. And we're very, very excited about him. I mean, he's just a very charming, very easygoing, just... you know, good-natured person, and it feels like it's going to be, that's going to be quite an event.
Oh, it sounds fascinating.
That really
yeah.
sounds
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Now, you know, you mentioned that, oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, funding-wise, to put all of this together, you reached out to colleagues, you made cold calls to places that you'd never been before?
Well, Doug.
Eric doesn't want to say that he works in adult film. Let's just put it out there.
I financed a lot of it myself. Part of it has been actually underwritten by the university.
Fantastic.
So we've gotten some funds there, too.
Good.
And that sort of thing.
Well, it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea.
It's a great idea.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that about the documentary, and I felt exactly the same way. I make a lot of jokes, but the same thing with Chaz Bono. I think you mm-hmm. see Chaz now and you think, you know, that is the perfectly logical place for that person to mm-hmm. be. You know, and it's so nice that they're becoming more visible now so that especially the young people who struggle with those issues now have someone to follow.
And our friend Alexandra...
Billings.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
From Chicago.
Yeah, a great role model.
Fantastic.
Once again, the website, collegetownfilmfestival.com, and the first screening is at the State Theater in 130 West College Avenue in State College, Pennsylvania, and also the show that Diane was discussing, very, very exciting, Nuttin But Hutton, that's at NoHo Arts Center, 11136 Magnolia Boulevard, Lancashire, North Hollywood, and for tickets, you can call 800-595-4849, or visit nuttonbutthutton.com. We have 5 minutes left, and we're going to baptize our two
baptize
guests.
Baptize you.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
You didn't hear about this, but you'll hear about it soon enough. We'll start with Diane. Diane, do you have a tale you can tell us of some performance disaster, something that went wrong during performance?
Well,
something
you tipped me off before the interview, but it seems like I have many. almost seemingly every appearance I've made was a mishap, but no. you know, they happen so rampantly in community theater. So I'll just give you a quick few.
Okay.
Fiddler on the Roof. I think I was the only shiksa in the cast. And we're in the wedding scene, and my skirt fell off in full view of the audience. So what does any girl do in that situation? You run behind the rabbi, and you put it back on. Thankfully, the rabbi was a large man.
The rabbi is one of the outtaken songs.
There's a lot of costume mishaps in theater, right? No, that song was cut from
it was.
Show.
Run Behind the Rabbi.
Pal Joey, Grand Dinner Theater, when we had dinner theater here in Los Angeles. Pal Joey, it's the Pal Joey Dream Ballet. I'm in a beautiful halter dress that I'm in the middle of a arabesque, and the halter snaps, and I expose the girls
wow.
to the entire cast and audience. And what does any girl do in that situation? You grab the girls and you run off stage
and find a rabbi.
Look for a statement and find a rabbi. And there's no rabbi to be found. And again, in community theater, we're just so rife with so many of these stories. But Dames at Sea, I'm playing the character of Ruby, and
Perfect.
She's a young, innocent, starstruck, getting off the bus from Pennsylvania, and it's my first scene, first time you see me, and I just as I'm preparing to go on stage, I take a look at myself and I go, oh, I better spray my. It was a heinous wig. Awful. A bit of spray. So I closed my eyes, grabbed the spray, and I'm heading to the stage, and it was white, gray paint. So I looked like an old hag.
Or it snowed on you in the wind.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there are so many. And we could talk for hours.
It's starting to sound like you're an exhibitionist. That's what it's starting to sound like.
Oh, but the Pal Joey one, my husband, shortly thereafter, I was having a big birthday. And we won't say which one, but he had a cake made for me at Rosebud Cake in Beverly Hills where they do these like really fancy portraits. And he had a ballerina painted on the cake, bare-breasted ballerina.
Beautiful.
Because it was just right after that.
Beautiful. I love him already.
That Sam Krieger,
wasn't it very thoughtful?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love him already.
And I got more, but it's not all about me, is it?
Eric, do you have one? I know we're we sprung this on you, but you got 2 minutes.
In my old days doing theater in Chicago, I was doing a play with somebody you know, both of you I think know, Jamie Denton.
Of course, yeah.
And we had a scene change that involved the two of us carrying off this 400-pound oak desk that somebody found in an alley.
It's funny already.
Our sets cost about $30 generally. So somebody found this thing in the alley, and it's just, it was one of those nights where, you know, I come off and feeling really good, and I walk back to the dressing room, and you know that feeling when you walk into the dressing room, you're like, I never see this combination. Like, right. I'm never in here at this time. Why am I in here?
This is a different group of people than I'm used to.
So the light goes on, and this theater was the second floor of a warehouse, and I'm sprinting back to the stage, and I just get to the wings, and as I get to the wings, Jamie, who's been standing stock still at one end of the desk until everything else is done, is, I wish I could do, I'm mainly a prop comic, as you know, but he is throwing his back and his legs under this thing and walking it off the back of the stage. It must have been the most awkward scene change in the history of the theater.
Oh,
it looked like an ant.
And I didn't move at all. I stayed right where I was. I was like, well, it's on now. So
that's hysterical.
That's
that is hilarious. Thank you both.
Yes,
thank you so much.
Thank you
very much.
Real quick, before we go, we'll throw it out here one more time. The show, Nuttin' But Hutton, website, nuttinbuthutton.com, and College Town Film Festival is the other website. Thank you both for coming.
Thank
I had a great time.
Really
absolutely. Eric and Diane, thank you.
Pleasure.
I'll be there
pleasure
on opening night.
Oh,
yes.
Certainly hope so. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Michael.
Thank you, Paul.
We'll talk to you next week.
You bet.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.